According to a new national report, Wisconsin saw the fourth most significant decline in per-student higher education spending in the country. That's according to the State Higher Education Executive Officers Association, which looked at data from all 50 states from 2013 to 2018. While many states saw a decline in this kind of spending following the Great Recession, many of them recovered and reversed the trend. Wisconsin has been slower to recover. Our next guest is here to talk about that report and the overall health of Wisconsin's higher education financing system. Nicholas Hillman is an associate professor in the Department of Educational Leadership and Policy Analysis for the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Nick, welcome back to the show.
Thank you for the invitation.
All right, looking at this report, big picture, it's a big deal, looking at what has happened in college funding since the Great Recession. What do you think of where Wisconsin stacks up here?
Well, just post-recession, Wisconsin is certainly towards the bottom of the nation in terms of recovery. A lot of other Midwestern states are still struggling to get back to pre-recession levels or even close to pre-recession levels, but Wisconsin especially so. And this data goes back to 1980. They started reporting this, gosh, in the 80s. And Wisconsin's trend even since then has just been going south. And so we, on a per-student basis, invest less today than we did, not just since the Great Recession, but since the 1980s.
And what is driving that change?
You know, several factors. I think politically, I think that there are just competing pressures that policymakers are prioritizing over higher education. I think that there might be a public mood that higher education pays off, and so individuals should share more of that financial burden. And I think that this is sort of a trend of uncoordinated policy in a lot of ways. Across the nation, but I think in Wisconsin especially, we don't necessarily have a plan on how to kind of keep the funding steady over time. And so I think all those things and several others probably play into this.
You mentioned the cost burden going to the person who gets the benefit of the education. Does that mean tuition has gone up as a result of this change in funding?
Yes and no. So tuition has stayed pretty flat, and the University of Wisconsin system has, by policy, had to have a flat tuition. But tuition only counts for maybe about 40% of the total cost of attendance, and so it's all of these non-tuition expenses that leave, you know, people on the hook to pay for housing, room, and board, and a number of other factors that it takes to invest in yourself. Tuition is important, but not the whole pie.
And that flat tuition, that applies to in-state undergraduates for the most part, right? Have other students out of state graduate school seen costs go up in Wisconsin?
That's right. So that in-state cap is for residents. And so, yes, tuition can rise for other groups of students.
Now, this is becoming a political issue. We've seen a major Democratic presidential candidate talk about trying to aim for tuition-free school, forgiving student loan debt. Have we seen this as a big political issue in years past?
In years past, yes. I'd say the Obama administration put higher education on the national radar in a number of ways, primarily by focusing on community colleges. One of the big initial efforts was the American Graduation Initiative that kind of never really took full flight from the Obama administration, but really put higher education on the radar nationally. And then in our most recent presidential election, both Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton had higher education as a part of their agendas. And just today I was reading a writer for The Atlantic, Adam Harris, says that basically a free tuition policy is your ticket to the Democratic convention if you're running for office.
Now, getting back to this report, why is Wisconsin low on this chart when it comes to per student funding from 2013 to 2018? What were we doing differently than many other states?
We had significant budgetary cuts to the UW system during that period of time when most other states were trying to either reinvest or at least kind of come back to pre-recession levels. And in the state of Wisconsin, we had significant cuts. And my understanding is that those were not because our economy was doing poorly as it was in the recession, because we've seen significant cuts during recessionary times. But this one was it was an off-recession budgetary cut that I would say boils down to politics and priorities, and I think a general public sentiment of distrust towards public higher education, which is sort of amplified in the conservative base.
Now, if funding is being cut to schools, especially those schools that don't have that big out-of-state student population where they can raise tuition from, something's got to give. I guess, what are we seeing for a lot of UW schools around the state when it comes to their funding?
Well, so funding in public higher education is such a mixed bag. You have some institutions that have multiple revenue sources. They might have a foundation that can generate money. They might have spin-offs or sort of entrepreneurial activities that can generate money. And on the other end of the spectrum, you might have institutions that are pretty much dependent on state appropriations and tuition as their main sort of bread and butter of revenue. And so the institutions that have the most diverse revenue streams are the ones that can handle these kind of ebbs and flows and these trends better than those that are more reliant on state appropriations.
Talking to Nicholas Hillman, Associate Professor in the Department of Educational Leadership and Policy Analysis at UW-Madison, looking at a new national report on per-student college spending, finds Wisconsin in the lower part of the charts across the nation since the year 2013. Nick, are we just talking about public schools in this, or are private schools that are a big part of the story, obviously, are they factored into these numbers?
They're factored in there in some metrics, but for the most part, this is all about public institutions. So this includes the University of Wisconsin system, but also it includes the two-year colleges and the Wisconsin Technical College system, which is really important because there could be different trends even within those sectors that aren't being captured here.
Now, when it comes to college affordability, we hear the perception anyway that college today costs a lot more than it did 30 years ago, say. Is that perception matching with reality?
When it comes to the out-of-pocket expense that an individual student has to pay, yes, absolutely, that's the case. There's been an intergenerational shift here where this generation, more recent generation, is not just paying more out-of-pocket, but the whole relationship with state appropriations and tuition has just flipped. So, for example, in the 1980s, it was about $3 came in from the state for every $1 that the student paid. So 3-to-1 ratio thereabouts. But now it's 1-to-1. And in fact, Wisconsin in 2016 flipped where we're getting more money from individual students than we are from the state tax base.
And that's the state funding. How about federal funding and student aid?
Well, the big federal pie comes through the federal Pell Grant, and that's a scholarship and grant program that students don't have to repay. And that has not kept pace with the rising tuition that has been charged over the past several decades. The main other pie is student loan debt, and that has just been steadily growing. And so for a student, yes, it's more expensive today to go to college than ever before. But at the same time, this is what makes this problem even more complicated, is that the payoff is still there for somebody who earns a degree on average. And so some people would say, and I'd argue this too, it's more expensive to not go to college. So even though it's expensive and even though there are significant debts to carry that can affect you for your life, not going to college could also be very expensive.
Now, you recently, I know, testified before Congress on some of these issues on not just affordability, but how colleges respond to concerns about affordability. What kind of things were you looking at there?
Boy, it runs the whole gamut, but I think a large part of that conversation, at least at the federal level, is how colleges can be more accountable for the outcomes of their student loans that are awarded at colleges. So, for example, an institution might have really high student loan debt on average of its graduates. And from the federal perspective, colleges might not have enough of incentive to prevent students from carrying large debts in the first place, and maybe even might not help them pay those debts down in the future, might not prepare them well for the labor market to pay those debts down. And so at the federal level, federal policymakers are very interested in holding colleges more accountable for loan outcomes.
There's kind of a fundamental argument I think we hear when we hear about the high costs of college and high student loan debts. One argument is, well, don't go to a college you can't afford. And a common response is, so if we go by that principle, we're basically taking today's wealth hierarchy and saying that's what it's going to be tomorrow. The rich people go to the rich schools and so on down the line. How does that all shake out as you look at these issues?
That is really how it shakes out. We have an extremely stratified system of higher education where the colleges that have the fewest resources tend to also serve the students who have the greatest needs and come from maybe the first in their family to go to college. And so we really are upside down in that respect. At the same time, the institutions that have the most resources tend to be a more affordable option for lower income students who can get in. And so that's the trick, is making sure that the public institutions that can hold down those tuition rates and hold down those loan debts are also expanding opportunities for the people from the lowest income families.
We're talking to Nick Hillman right now about the state of higher education spending in Wisconsin. He's an associate professor in the Department of Educational Leadership and Policy Analysis at UW-Madison. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What's your reaction to the news in this report? Wisconsin has seen higher education funding go down in the last five-year period on a per-student basis. That doesn't compare favorably to most states. What would you like to see change, if anything, when it comes to higher education funding? And what questions do you have about how college funding works, how tuition is set, and how student debt gets accumulated by students around the country? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Right now, we continue our conversation about the state of higher education funding in Wisconsin. A recent national report found that the state saw the fourth largest decline in per-student spending during a five-year period starting in 2013. Nick Hillman is with us, associate professor in the Department of Educational Leadership and Policy Analysis for UW-Madison. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think Wisconsin has made higher education, the colleges, the two-year colleges, the technical colleges, a high enough priority when it comes to budgets? What would you like to see as we enter a new budget year? What would you like to see when it comes to how we fund colleges and universities? And what do you think of the trend, as Nick was saying earlier, of more of the cost of college coming from the student, less coming from the state and federal government? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. As always, you can tweet us at Central Time WPR. Let's get back to Elizabeth Warren, Senator Elizabeth Warren running for president, talking about her plan for to cut college tuition to zero, I guess, in many cases, and student loans. And just during the break, you're talking about, you'd heard her use the phrase a failed experiment about our student loan system. What do you make of that?
Well, it's a statement. It's a term that stood out to me because I hadn't heard other elected officials or people running for office frame it in this way. And so this argument is that this is, like she said, a failed experiment, but an intergenerationally sort of unequal experiment too, where the baby boomer generation had a totally different way of paying for college and doesn't totally have the same opportunities for this generation of students now. And so that's part of the framing of the argument. Her proposal, as I understand it, would include not just a debt forgiveness for sort of a sliding scale sort of for different income groups. You'd have different levels of debt forgiven if this goes through, but also some degree of investment and commitment from states to match what I believe is at least going to be a matching grant between the federal and state governments to try to have a shared system of support that we currently don't really have coordinated across federal and state governments right now.
Looking at the history of how schools have been funded here in Wisconsin, we're seeing this decline again in this last five-year period. Before that, how did Wisconsin stack up when it came to commitments to funding higher education?
In terms of appropriations per student, Wisconsin was right at the top of the pack in terms of support per student being high in the Midwest, probably throughout the 1990s. But it has bounced around over time, depending on a number of factors that we discussed earlier. But Wisconsin has both been at the top and now towards the bottom in terms of the Midwest and appropriations per student.
And how much of that can we blame on the Great Recession itself, or how much of that was policy decisions that were made regardless of that?
It's hard to say. I think across the country, though, the Great Recession has really changed the way that states finance higher education. I think that that was a big hit to income for middle-income families especially. People don't have the resources and the assets to pay for college, and so there was some degree of interest in responding to that and making college more affordable because of it. But at the same time, you don't have as much tax base to draw from. So it's really complicated. And so I'd say it's a little bit of both.
Let's go to our callers now at 800-642-1234. We'll go to Ben with us in Eau Claire. Ben, hi.
Hi, how are you guys?
Good. What did you want to bring up, Ben?
Great. So I teach in the Community and Technical College system, and I am soon going to be looking to make the jump from the two-year system to the four-year system. And I was just wondering if the guest could comment on the future of the state schools, the private schools, and the community college system in the state of Wisconsin, maybe from a faculty perspective, and then specifically about the sustainability and things like that.
Great question. I'll jump in.
Sure.
So I think on one hand, you have a different cost structure across the different sectors of higher education. So delivering a course in a community college, depending on the course, of course, is going to have different cost structure than delivering a course at a private or a public research university, for example. This does not always apply, but there are different cost structures here. There are also different faculty models of how faculty have positions within the institutions, how much they get compensated for those positions, and those are also changing. So I would say, on average, the tech college, community college system is going to be a less expensive education to deliver. So from many vantage points, that might be a more desirable one to fund via state subsidies.
Thanks a lot for the call, Ben. One concern people raise when they hear about the cost of higher education is the expense, the costs for the schools themselves, and whether we have a lot of, I guess, frills at colleges. Are we paying for stuff that we don't need?
That's a really hard one to answer. I think that question will continue to be asked because it's so hard to answer. Mm-hmm. But here are two ways to think about it. The first is that any educational institution is driven not by climbing walls and lazy rivers, as is sometimes painted, the picture is kind of painted of institutions, but the big cost driver is people, is the salaries, wages, benefits, healthcare, all that goes into having highly trained professionals work in the space of teaching and learning and discovery. And so from that angle, it's just an expensive enterprise. And even if you had a no-frills enterprise, it would still be very expensive on that level. On the other level, there is pressure to be sort of recognized for having high quality. But the problem is that quality is very hard to measure in education, higher education in particular. And so we don't necessarily have a good metric of quality. And so sometimes we just say, well, if you spend a lot, if you deliver a really expensive education, it must be better. And so there's partly, you know, it's part of both of those things.
We're talking to Nicholas Hillman, associate professor in the Department of Educational Leadership and Policy Analysis at UW-Madison, looking at a new report in education, higher education spending in the 50 states, finds Wisconsin has gone down when it comes to per student funding. We're fourth lowest in the nation on that rating of states. Do you see a movement, Nick, to change that here in Wisconsin? We have a new new budget plan from Governor Evers. We're likely to see a different plan from Republicans in the state legislature. Do you see an appetite to change this?
I do. I do. I think that the public perception of higher education is still skeptical, I think, in many respects of the institutions themselves. But I think that the value proposition of what you get for having not just your own family well-educated, but your neighbors to have a nice round educational opportunity, the payoff there and the value added is there. And so I think people are very interested in that process. I think that communities and policymakers are really facing significant challenges right now. And because of that, they might say, well, higher education is sort of on the back burner. We have other priorities like opioid epidemic or environmental emergencies or you name it. We have all these other problems that are facing us today. And so because of that, they might put higher education on the back burner. And I would say that this budget kind of recalibrates that and says, well, if you want to solve those problems, you need a well-educated workforce, a well-educated citizenry to be able to be problem solvers. And so I think those worlds are hopefully converging.
Let's bring on another caller now. Charles is with us in Trevor. Charles, hello.
Hi there. Just calling to share kind of my experience mm-hmm. with all this. A couple years back, I was accepted into a technical college program for CNC production. I completed that. It was state-funded through Wisconsin. After completing it, I worked for about 2 years, and I just went back and completed a CNC programming technical diploma on my own accord. I still owe the money for that. And my main comment was that I would be pursuing, you know, probably an engineering degree at the moment. It just seems to be a little out of my range, and I would love for there to be, you know, more help with that sort of thing. And I really appreciate you guys talking about this.
Charles, thanks a lot for the call. So somebody with what sounds like a demonstrated commitment to finishing whatever course of education he's in, do we have those pathways for somebody like Charles to get that, say, four-year engineering degree?
There may be pathways I'm unfamiliar with, but I think that the point earlier that I think he articulated for me so well is that it's more expensive to miss out on those opportunities. That cost to society is greater if he's not enrolled in those programs, and the benefits that he can bring to his family and communities by enrolling, those costs are far greater than him not going at all. So I think that's the spirit there is that investing in him can help sort of invest in this, those broader benefits.
Thanks for the call, Charles. Good luck. In our last minute or so, Nick, do you see anybody who's gotten this right? A state, a college, who's done a great job, you think, of getting college costs down and making the access for students like Charles?
No. Not there. Not there yet.
Wow.
I think some states are finding solutions that are at least addressing some of these problems. I know in Tennessee, for example, they have a Reconnect program where adults like who are returning to education can get a tuition fully covered, and they're investing in that. And I think that's a promising idea. There are other states that are requiring, the FAFSA form, the free application for federal student aid. They're requiring that as part of high school graduation. And so they're like sort of pieces and parts of things that seem promising, but I haven't seen one state just really put it all together and have a comprehensive approach that also addresses those resource inequalities we mentioned earlier.
We'll leave it there for now. Nick, thanks for joining us again today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
That's Nicholas Hillman, Associate Professor in the Department of Educational Leadership and Policy Analysis at UW-Madison. He joined us today to talk about a recent report that found Wisconsin saw the fourth largest decline in per-student higher education spending in the country in a five-year period, 2013 to 2018.